Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Nice shooting, John. Pretty good for an old guy.
Laser sights, hair trigger, hit the target, blub, blub, blub. I'm John Kurlinski.
I am Stan Hudson. We want to welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle,
where we take a very lighthearted look at the very serious issues of where we came from, where we're going, creation, evolution, science, scripture. We're looking for answers to the big questions. And you know, John, it takes us all over the place into all kinds of subjects.
You know, sometimes, Stan, we look for answers, but the reality is that the more and more we look, sometimes the farther and farther answers seem to be. You know, and that's true for science a lot,
okay,
too, because the more and more scientists search and think they know something, and the farther along a certain particular discipline they study and pursue, all the things they once assumed they'd find are turned upside down and on their head. Like, oh, that wrecks everything. So now
yes,
we've got to try to reconfigure all of our physics or all of our, you know, biology or all of our theorems, whatever.
Well, I would argue just a smidge with that, my good fellow, because it seems like they don't necessarily rethink everything. They seem to tweak existing models to make those models work.
And we are
not the first ones to observe that.
And the sad thing is that some of those models, even when they tweak them, really don't work. They just become kind of, well, we don't know what it is. Let's just move on to other stuff for now. Maybe we'll come back and answer that if we find more information.
Yes.
But for now, we're just sort of stumped and flummoxed.
Yes.
That's a nice word, flummoxed.
Flummoxed. How can you, what is, okay,
the flummoxed. The flummoxed astronomers is what we want to look at today, Stan.
Today we're looking at old cars on bricks set up in, you know, the backyards.
Distant backyards of the universe.
Old galaxies. See,
what, you know, here's the theory.
Not Ford galaxies, incidentally.
Yeah, yes. I've ridden in Ford galaxies. Galaxy 500.
Ooh.
Backwards.
Was it an old one?
It was an old one.
Okay.
It Rattletrap got us. We actually owned one as a family. Anyway, what happens, the theory is this in astronomy, is that when they have the Hubble telescope, it can search into the deep recesses of space between what you would normally see as dark, you know, it looks like dark from our human eyes.
Yes.
They can focus the Hubble telescope and for a long period of time and take a picture.
And
they're trying to gather light from dark spots in our starry host so they can help try to see the very beginnings of what they assume were the Big Bang, approximately 12.3 to 12.8
14
billion years ago.
Uh-huh.
Old light. They're looking for light, old light or old origin.
And it was Edwin Hubble who first discovered the fact that light seemed to be, the wavelength seemed to indicate that the universe was expanding, and even though he wasn't the first one to believe in an expanding universe, he eventually came on board, and it got nicknamed the Big Bang because the Big Bang seemed to be the way to wind back the clock on an expanding universe. If it's expanding, that means at some point
it was closer together.
It was closer together until, well, what was the beginning of it? There must have been, I mean, really close together.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe being really close together was somehow contributing to it going really not so close together. And we call that the Big Bang or the explosion that created the matter we see in the universe, according to popular theory.
Now, what happens, Stan, is that when they start looking back into the dark recesses of space, they're hoping to get as far back as they can in time finding ancient light.
Well, now, why would looking to the distant, most distant objects in the universe reveal the beginning?
Because the light took the longest to get here.
Because
they go by the speed of light.
Yes.
And they travel. And so what happened is they focused the sky, and all of a sudden, oops, they discovered something. They discovered light, all right.
Yes.
And they discovered a series, and actually what they discovered was they came to what they thought was the very beginning of the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you have the Big Bang, things explode. It takes time for things like for elements to develop and galaxies to develop and constellations.
Yes.
And what they found
That's a thought.
In the very old, what they thought was a very early part of the Big Bang in a very old neighbor, very oldest parts of the universe.
Right.
They found a bunch of galaxies.
Okay. Now here's the thing. When you're looking back several billion light years, you are looking back in time. You're looking because it's taken that long for the light to get to you.
You expect to find pre-galactic type structures.
When you look at the edge of the expanding universe, if you're looking out there 12 billion light years, you're looking at supposedly some of the things that were flashing light at their very origin are not too long after the Big Bang. So what you would expect to find when you're looking at galaxies are young galaxies. The further out you look, you should be seeing galaxies that appear to be not
quite
so
new
rusty.
In their formation.
They got four tires. They got the white walls. They're going. They're looking hot. These are hot galaxies. No, no, we're not talking about Fords. We're talking about stars. Nice looking rings that are seemingly brand new and starting to get into the
place.
But we're finding mature galaxies,
spiral galaxies that are well developed, way beyond their years. You look very old, way beyond your years, was the statements they like to make about them. Well, how did that old bugger get in there? And they found lots of these. They found thousands and thousands and millions of these old galaxies in a place where they didn't expect to find them. They were in the wrong neighborhood.
There was an international team of astronomers led by Dr. James Dunlop of the University of Edinburgh in Scotland who observed this particular galaxy we're talking about, and it supposedly is appearing as though it were only 1.6 billion years after the Big Bang, and that should be make it a really baby galaxy. But when they looked at it, they aged it. They guessed the age as something like 3.5 billion years, so almost 2 billion years older than it should be, and how it got so mature looking is a paradox. They're saying that this is one of the best studied and best understood of these old galaxies at the beginning of the Big Bang, and it is particularly perplexing to them in their current model of the Big Bang.
It's kind of like going into the nursery of a hospital and finding a child with a full mustache and beard, you know, about six days old, you know.
Wait a minute.
Gray hairs and facial hair in his beard, and this is supposed to be a new baby, and he's an old baby.
Yeah.
That's the irony here, Stan.
Yeah, and how can galaxies age? You know, what is the name of that disease? There's a disease that that does strike people.
Where
its age actually seems to be faster.
I thought that was called life.
I remember what it
teenagers.
Is. Teenagers.
that's that disease.
Having
that
teenagers.
Ages you really fast.
I didn't have gray hair before I had teenagers.
I didn't have wrinkles
before. I got
them
now.
Yep. That's right.
Okay.
There must have been teenagers around that galaxy. No.
That's it.
So what it does is it really throws off the models. If you assume that the universe is like, you know, 12 or 14 billion years old, all of a sudden you got to push it back farther when you've had all kinds of good reasons to contract it much newer, you know, making it. So what the best thing they should say, Stan?
What should they say?
I don't know. Those three words that men find so hard to say. Red,
yes,
green.
Red, green. So Dr. Hogan, who was also asked about this sort of thing, said, this tells us about that the only models that seem to work are those for low densities in which the universe is going to expand forever. Like many other theorists, Dr. Hogan also began 2 years ago reviving the idea of a cosmological constant. That was when cosmology was confronted with its first age paradox. Now, notice this. The Hubble Space Telescope indicates that the universe was younger than usually estimated, from 8 to 11 billion years old, and this too seemed impossible because they're finding stars that appear to be 13 to 17 billion years old. And again, all of these conflicting things seem to say,
I don't know. You know, that's a very good answer for lots of things. I think if evolutionists, or actually scientists in general, scientists in general just had the humility to say, you know what, I don't have a clue what I'm talking about. But
you know,
I know these properties. I do know that this seems to work this way.
Yes.
We could extrapolate beyond the data. But as soon as you start doing that, you get into that great I don't know land.
You know what would be nice to hear hear them say, I don't know, instead of what they usually say is, oh, creationist, you don't know.
Yeah, you don't know.
We know that you don't know.
Yeah. So it's, you know, They find more and more of these galaxies. Yes. Hubble has went into deep space, and they found reddish-orange galaxies that appear unusually massive and mature for their place in a young universe. Mm-hmm. They actually named one the Arnold Schwarzenegger of all galaxies, about 8 times more mass in stars than are found in our own Milky Way. Ooh. And it led all these astronomers...
Steroids.
A galaxy on steroids.
Yep.
And all these massive galaxies that are too big or out of place or whatever... You know, they just bring the conundrum. And what they really should cause, I think, when you really start looking at the starry heavens, mm-hmm. the people of the Bible seem to, when they contemplate the stars of heaven and all the things, and then they start saying, what are we that, you know, who are you, God? What is this all about? And they are filled with sort of a reverence and awe and a humility. In this case here, they're just filled with a little bit of perplexity, and they're just kind of flummoxed.
Well, I'd like to use a torpedo text, John, and it's from the book of Job. And in this book, actually, we have a dialogue between God and Job, and God is doing the speaking in these verses here when he says, speaking to Job, can you bind the cluster of the Pleiades? And incidentally, Pleiades, one of the most beautiful star clusters in the sky. You don't need a telescope or anything to see them. They're just right there. Or can you loose the belt of Orion? Can you bring out Maseroth in its season? Or can you guide the Great Bear with its cubs? These are all constellations.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you set their dominion over the earth? And the answer, of course, would be at this point, I don't think so.
No, God's going,
I got you. You think you can understand the universe? You think you can put it all together and operate it? Do you think you've got that kind of smarts? And of course, at the end of that long dialogue with Job, of course, he does say, I was talking and I should have been quiet.
I don't know.
No.
You know all too well. Okay, I'm throwing myself on your mercy. Please don't kill me.
No.
He doesn't get quite that way, but the point is that Job is struck with an awe and a humility.
Yes.
And just repents in dust and ashes of just being as human as he really is.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, the book of Isaiah, mm-hmm. which is, these are some of the mind-boggling things of God. You know, when you look at the stars, they're mind-boggling because, you know, not only does they understand with Hubble, but the Bible says that God placed the stars in heaven. They're upheld by the power of his might, and he calls them all by name, and not one of them is missing.
Wow.
And I think of, you know, God's baby book, you know. We have to name our kids, you know. We talk about names and difficulties, you know. That's another, just, you know.
A whole lot of birthdays, remember.
Yeah, a whole lot of birthdays or you know, how you keep track of time or what you spin into existence. But the way that God, the Bible portrays God as the star maker, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole point of it is always in the idea that, and I know all about you.
Yes.
As distant and vast and huge and far away and mind-bending and mind-boggling as those are, I'm also very intimately acquainted with what seems to be the insignificant speck of existence. That's why David would say in Psalm 8, you know, what is man that you're mindful of us? I mean, you got lots of bigger things on your mind out there in this universe. Who in the world are we? Huh?
And yet Jesus goes on to say things like, you know, God notices the sparrows and even the hairs on your head are numbered.
Yeah.
How can God know so much about us in this great universe? How can he care so much about us? And that we get strictly from the Bible. We see the awesomeness of nature and revealed in the stars, the glories of the stars. And you can be just with that image of God, kind of small and feel scared and frightened. But through revelation, through Jesus coming and becoming flesh and dwelling among us, we see the loving and nurturing character of God. We realize God is someone you don't run away from, you run toward.
What you should do is be like, think like, remember God's story to Abraham. Next time you look in the heavens, don't try to figure out how old they are. God says, I want to make you like the stars of the heaven, your offspring.
Yes.
I want to save the whole lot of you if I can.
I like that.
So trust in me. We hope that you'll find that to be your experience when you tune in week to week to Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time to another episode of Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile from on seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Island.